Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
It was inevitable, wasn't it? With all the travel and campaigning Donald Trump has been doing, sooner or later he was going to be exposed to the highly infectious COVID-19 virus. And now he and his wife have tested positive for the disease. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. From what I've seen so far, neither the president nor Melania Trump have much in the way of symptoms, so that's a good sign. The update on the president's condition earlier today from the doctors at Walter Reed Medical Center is that the president is doing fine and receiving treatment with remdesivir, an experimental antiviral drug, which has been used with some success, at least, in treating COVID-19, along with the anti-inflammatory steroid dexamethasone. During the update news briefing, the president's doctor said he is doing well and may be discharged from the hospital as early as tomorrow. After he was discovered to have COVID-19 late Thursday and reported not feeling well, Trump did receive supplemental oxygen briefly, his doctor said. But he is not currently on nor in need of supplemental oxygen. Melania was asymptomatic and has not been hospitalized. The president put out a short video message on his campaign website thanking his well-wishers and reassuring the public that he is feeling much better, is in good spirits, and intends to continue with his regular duties as much as possible during his quarantine period. A number of others close to the president have also tested positive for the virus, including Trump's campaign manager, his senior advisor Hope Hicks, along with three Republican senators, all of whom are reportedly doing well. This must come as a blow to the anti-Trump media haters, who like to portray coming down with COVID-19 as often a virtual death sentence that will never be treated successfully unless a cure-all vaccine is developed. As we have pointed out numerous times, some 80% of people who get coronavirus, as is also known, have no or mild symptoms. And that's what we who support the president sincerely hope and pray will be the case with him and Melania. This is a developing story, of course, and we'll be watching it carefully. But that is the latest information I have, and it's very positive in my opinion. The president and his wife do have access to the best health care available, the best medical establishment in the country, that is, health care. And at least one doctor publicly commenting on the first couple's illness predicts they each have a 99% or better percent chance of making a complete recovery. So that's very, very good news. You know, I believe I had coronavirus myself back in June. If it was coronavirus, I had mild symptoms and made a rapid and complete recovery and was not hospitalized. In fact, I didn't even see a doctor. At that time, the authorities, fearful of area hospitals being overwhelmed, were telling people to stay away from doctors, their doctors, and hospitals if they weren't sick or were not very sick. On top of this, there have been not been any antibody testing sites available in my area, only ones for active infection. That's the drive-in sites, where it's more convenient to go. I'm looking into getting the antibody test to see if I had COVID-19, but haven't wanted to shell out $150 I was told it would cost for the test, in at least one instance I looked into it. I did have the standard symptoms of coronavirus, fever, cough, and fatigue, but again, all these were very mild in my case, were off and on, and disappeared after about a week. I did also get a gum infection with this illness that lasted about another week, for which I took antibiotics, gargled a lot with antiseptic mouthwash, and relied again on numerous nutritional supplements I take anyway, and also increasingly took additionally some additional supplements that were supposed to help boost your immune system that I had researched when the outbreak began. But the gum infection was an indication to me that this illness I had had the potential to be virulent. It's highly unusual for me to get sick like that in June. I can't remember ever being sick with anything in June. I had been doing research, as I said, on coronavirus and obtained it and took numerous nutritional supplements I believed helped me get over this disease, but I'm not a doctor and couldn't say how others would respond to my same treatments for this. It was self-treatment, of course, assuming it was COVID-19. I'll let you know more about all this when I get the antibody test. Since the Trump's testing positive for coronavirus just happened a few days ago, it's a fast-developing story which we'll be following closely. I, for one, predict that unless he has severe symptoms, and he doesn't at present, the president won't let this illness slow him down much, if at all, this close to the election. But we'll have to wait and see what comes of everything. Meanwhile, as you would expect, the Trump haters out there are gleefully rejoicing and hoping for the worst for the president. Supporters, world leaders, and even some political opponents are wishing the Trumps a speedy and complete recovery. This phenomenon of raging hatred for Donald Trump and his supporters by so many of his opponents is something that merits discussion in more detail. On previous shows, we've discussed the outrage of the swamp creatures in the Washington, D.C. and other governmental establishments out there over Trump being an outsider and seeking to drain the swamp, as he calls it, and diminish their lives of luxury and power at the expense of the American people. We are talking here about the so-called deep state, and also referred to sometimes as the permanent political class, but also about the large and growing group of societal establishment figures who are fabulously enriching themselves through privileged business arrangements with communist China, which is seeking ever wider influence over America. The terrible dangers we are facing from these groups who are more than willing to sell out their own country and the best interests of its people for their own aggrandizement is shocking and deeply disturbing. And we must do all that we can to wake up more of the American people before it's too late. The outcome of the November elections will be a key factor in the future of our country. But so many millions remain completely ignorant of these implications and or refuse to even acknowledge that they exist. Let's listen to radio host Rush Limbaugh discussing with a caller on his show September 25 why so many people are still going to vote for the Democrats. Play soundbite one, please.
But the Democrat Party loyalty, look, the Republicans have the same thing. There's going to be a certain percentage of voters going to vote for whoever's got an R by their name on the ballot. Mm-hmm. My point in saying it this way is that how many people do you think voting for Biden really know all that much? All they know is he was Obama's vice president. If they loved Obama, then that's all they need to know.
But that's another thing that drives me crazy. It's like, especially this, well, these last 4 years, everything they've done to Donald Trump, but with all the stuff coming out, all the unrest in the country, how are they not looking further? How are they not paying attention closer? Like, this should be the most important thing anybody is thinking about. I know everybody has their own private things going on, but you can't get away from this right now. So how are they not
look into this? You're singing my song. I've been frustrated for pretty much the entire time that I've been doing this program, that the simple fact that the Democrat candidate, no matter who he is, no matter what he's done, is going to get, without having to lift a finger, 40 to 45% of the vote just because of party loyalty. Now, would you agree, Brenda, that we live, for those of us alive today, mm-hmm. that these are the most roiled, the most violent, the most dangerous, the most scary, the most unsettled times in our lives politically?
Absolutely.
I mean, hands down, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The 60s can't even compare to this. That was just a bunch of, you know, newfangled college students trying to blow things up. This is the Democrat Party is doing all this in conjunction with a bunch of radical left communists mm-hmm. who are literally trying to. And I ask myself, why?
Yep.
Don't more mainstream Americans see what's going on? And then you have to ask, well, what are they seeing based on media they consume? And what are they being told? And what do they actually know about it?
Right.
I mean, you've got...
They can seek out other, you know, media positions, you know. They don't have to always listen to the left-wing media. I mean, how can they not just go, well, it's never been like this in my life. I've never seen America like this and these riots and this is craziness. Why is this going on? And
well, let me give you
why they don't take that extra step and seek that information.
Let me give you an alternative perspective. Let me give you an alternative way of looking that you're not going to want to hear. but let me go at it this way. Let's acknowledge that a significant percentage of the population is not as into politics as you and I and mm-hmm. everybody listening to this program happen to be. Some people, a lot of people, don't start paying attention to this stuff until about now.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they judge how they're going to vote for president is how things are going at the time of the vote. Now, Trump gets elected in 2016, is inaugurated in 2017. Would you care to recount for me what's happened to America since 2017? As far as most people are concerned, the economy is in the tank. People are dying from a pandemic. There's no end in sight to it. They can't get their kids back to school. You can't send fans to a baseball or football game. And who to blame for this? People the voters seek somebody to blame. And they blame whoever is in power. This is why the economy has always been considered to be the bellwether. If you got a great economy, doesn't matter what else.
We may have cut that short a little bit here. I did in the editing. I'm sorry. But anyway, I see what he's basically saying is that if the economy is bad, people are going to blame the president in power, thinking that it's all his doing. As we'll see as I go further into the show, it's obvious, certainly to me, and there's a lot of evidence for it, that the Democrats, his opponents, want to see the economy as bad as possible, so hopefully the voters will throw Trump out. Here's another bit of audio from Limbaugh's program October 2 with his comments on what we are witnessing in America today. Play soundbite 2, please.
We are living in a revolution, an actual revolution, not just the word. There is an actual revolution taking place. The American left is revolting against America as founded. They are not the Democrat Party of old. This is not the Democrats versus the Republicans. This is American Marxists and communists conducting a revolution against America as founded. Now, going back to this government requirement to create equal income and power for every maligned group, as should be immediately apparent, achieving this kind of outcome equality requires a never-ending redistribution of wealth and power, which can only be achieved with a tyrannical form of government. This is to say, multiculturalism, which has taken over the Democrat Party, constitutes a revolutionary movement. I don't mean a metaphorical revolution. It's not like a revolution. It is a revolution. An attempt to overthrow the American founding.
Now, this stuff is just too scary and too much to believe for many people, notwithstanding what's been going on around them these days. On a lighter note, here's audio from a quick video from an outfit called Meme World, meme meaning narrative, featured on the website ban.video. It's titled Vote Democrat This Election, Corruption and Stupidity for a Better Tomorrow. Please play soundbite 3.
Are you sick and tired of your calm, peaceful life? Are you sleeping too well at night? Is your city too safe? Well, not anymore. Introducing Democrats. Politicians so incompetent, they'll fill your neighborhood with riots, looting, rampant violence, and even homelessness. The secret is a special blend of corruption and good old-fashioned stupidity. No more pesky law and order. When Democrats are in charge, nobody's safe. Simply vote for Democrats, sit back, and watch your neighborhood burn to the ground. But wait, vote for Democrats now, and they'll include rolling blackouts, election fraud, cancel culture, taxes, and more taxes. Democrats, bringing chaos right to your front door.
Well, I don't know how many people found that funny. I did. But anyway, with these things in mind, it's no surprise that the mainstream Democratic Party's propagandist media attack dogs have been running and barking furiously, especially since last Tuesday's first presidential debate, trying, as always, to destroy Trump and pump up Joe Biden, who so many of the endless leftist-controlled polls keep indicating is likely going to win in a landslide this November. Furious over Trump's aggressiveness and attacks on Biden, the leftist media attack dogs have since the debate been intensifying the promotion of their canard that Trump is somehow a racist and a white supremacist, even though Trump has repeatedly and explicitly denounced any form of racism and extremist violence. This lie and fraud has been ongoing for quite some time. These people are also pushing the narrative that Trump will refuse to concede if he loses the election. Anyone can contest an election. Listen here to just a few moments of a recent White House press briefing where some of these Democrat activists and propagandists are pressing the White House spokesperson, Kayleigh McEnany, for the responses they are looking for some of their favorite contentions. Play soundbite four, please.
John.
Yeah, Kelly, I wonder if you can just clean up or clarify something the president said yesterday. If he loses this election, can you assure us that there will be a peaceful transfer of power?
You are referring to the question asked by the Playboy reporter, right?
I'm referring to you with the president being asked if there would be a peaceful transfer of power, and he did not say yes.
Yeah,
so
I'm
asking you, will there be a peaceful transfer of power if he loses this
election? I believe that question asked by the Playboy power. In fact, I think I have it right here. He was asked win, lose, or draw, whether he would accept the transfer of power. I'm not entirely sure if he won, why he would accept a transfer of power. That is maybe the deranged wish of that reporter, but that's not how governing
very
works.
Very direct and very simple question. If the president loses this election, will this White House, will this president assure us that there will be a peaceful transfer of power? It's a very simple question.
The president will accept the results of a free and fair election. But I think that your question is more fitting to be asked of Democrats who have already been on the record saying they won't accept the results of an election. In fact, I have several of them here for you. South Carolina Democrat Jim Clyburn has said that Trump is not going to win fairly. Senator Barbara Boxer has said that the only way Trump will win is to steal it. That's according to Democrat Senator Barbara Boxer. The Washington Post has noted they have a headline, Democrats may not trust the results of the election if Trump wins. And then you have that beautiful quote from Hillary Clinton that Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstance. So I think your fitting is more a fitting question for Democrats. Yes.
Kayleigh, just to understand this clearly, are the results legitimate only if the president wins?
The president will accept the results of a free and fair election. He will accept the will of the American people.
So for clarity, if he loses and it's free and fair, he will accept
it. I've answered your question. He will accept the results of a free and fair election.
Let me ask you about Breonna Taylor, if I can, right now. First of all, just a little housekeeping. Has the president spoken to the family of Breonna Taylor?
I'm not aware of any conversation that they've had, but our hearts do go out to her family.
Has the president spoken to the officers who were shot last night in Louisville?
I'm not aware of any conversations.
So the president spoke to the officers who were shot in Los Angeles, but to this point, there's no indication the president at any point over the last several months has spoken to the family of Breonna Taylor. I guess why not?
The president routinely speaks to victims of horrendous tragedies. I've been here when he's met with the parents who lost their children to instances of police brutality. It was a really beautiful meeting, and the president consoled them. He's talked to the widows who have lost their husbands to police officers. He's spoken to widows of fallen soldiers. He routinely reaches out to victims of all kinds of atrocities, and he'll continue to do that.
What is the president? Yeah.
You can better understand this behavior if you are aware that a key component of these phony, hypocrite Marxists' worldview and ideology is that Caucasians, white people, and particularly white males, are fundamentally racist, treat all non-whites with varying degrees of racism, and are the cause of all the problems in the world. This despite the fact that many of these leftist media attack dogs are themselves white and white males. From a lifetime of brainwashing, they see themselves as part of the solution, not the problem, and therefore can justify in their own minds and hypocrisy them holding their overpaid positions of influence in American society and culture. As far as the debate went, I doubt Trump's performance in the debate lost him any of his regular support base, but I'm sure there were people out there who were turned off by the president's aggressive stances toward Biden and the debate moderator Chris Wallace, who I thought revealed himself as the never-Trumper and liberal, that is, leftist, that he always has been, though he hasn't been as rabid a leftist as so many others in the media. The moderator for debate number two is a former Joe Biden intern and supporter. Do you think there's something to Trump's claim that the debate commission is biased against him? The president's aggressiveness in the debate was just Trump being Trump. Trump's supporters understand this and don't blame the president for it. After all, if anyone has a right to be aggressive in defending himself against slanders and lies, it's Donald Trump. As commentator Bill O'Reilly observed, the president gets upset, doesn't anyone, when people are lying about him and becomes aggressive in trying to defend himself. Joe Biden, knowing his lapdogs and sycophants in the media, will cheer on anything he does or says, fail back on the ridiculous lies that Trump supposedly called dead U.S. veterans suckers and losers, claimed the pandemic-caused recession was all Trump's fault, and on it went, with the usual lies and platitudes for the masses, that is, Joe Biden, the ultimate establishment swamp creature. I, for one, would have preferred that Trump would have let Biden finish more of his responses and not engaged in so much interruption, but it was what it was. Some people saw poor, frail old Biden being picked on. I also would have liked to have seen clearer, more detailed responses to the from the president, such as when he was asking why he pulled the U.S. out of the left's vaunted Paris Climate Accords and answered that it was a terrible deal for the U.S. without going into further detail or being able to. It's my understanding that these accords hamstrung the U.S. and other developed nations with harsh, economically damaging environmental restrictions while giving a pass to developing nations along with transferring a lot of our wealth to them. These debates don't really give the debaters enough time to go into a lot of detailed answers in the first place, so carefully crafted answers are difficult, if not impossible, to deliver. Also, most of the questions Wallace asked, the moderator Wallace, were the standard leftist claptrap. Will the candidates confirm they will abide by the election results? What are their answers to climate change? How do we recover from the pandemic? All that being said, it was true that Biden did not collapse or implode, as I think it was one of the commentators I heard say. He did not, as he might have been expected to do during the debate. He refused to disclose what medications he was taking, but whatever medication or cocktail of medications his physicians had him on seemed to be working, and he did not slide into the gaffes that he has so much earlier during the campaign. So I suppose to many people, particularly the low information types out there, Biden gave a pretty good performance overall during the debate, which probably helped him with undecided voters, at least somewhat. After the debate, the opposition media has been busily and savagely as usual, as I said, attacking the president and promoting the same old lies and gross distortions against him that they have since the beginning of his candidacy and presidency. These include the ludicrous and now thoroughly debunked contention that Trump stole the 2016 election with the aid of Russia and is a Russian agent. This is also known as the Russia collusion hoax. Also that Trump lied on his tax returns and pays no income tax. That the pandemic and recession are all Trump's fault. That Trump said people should inject chlorine bleach into their veins to treat COVID-19. That Trump is a white supremacist and racist. That Trump called, dead veterans suckers and losers. That Trump will contest the election when Biden beats him and refuse to concede or leave office, even inciting a civil war to desperately try to remain in office. It's stunning and sickening to witness the depth of the sheer hatred and never-ending condemnation of the president and the extent to which the opposition will lie to bring down his presidency. For example, the Russia collusion hoax. Former Obama CIA director John Brennan and the former national security head James Clapper were for so long regularly denouncing Trump as a Russian agent and collaborator who stole the 2016 election with Russia's help. But as we learned recently when their testimony was made public, their formerly secret testimony under oath before Congress, it turns out that they had long before they did all this testified under oath, but in secret before Congress, that they had no evidence whatsoever of the president colluding with Russia. Numerous other government officials testified that there was no such evidence. There was never any evidence to support the Russia collusion hoax. But our opponents keep dredging it up and claiming it's true. As a result, there are still many millions of Americans who believe to this day that Trump is somehow a Russian agent and asset. As Hitler's propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels reportedly said, along with other people, as down through history, have said, tell a lie often enough and people will believe it. These false and baseless contentions are so widespread and continuously spouted by left-wing politicians, academics, and activists disguising themselves as journalists that millions embrace them and will vote for anyone who is running against Trump and for anyone who is a member of the Democratic Party, which, as former Marxist David Horowitz of the Freedom Center points out, is today essentially the Communist Party in America. But it's not just the media types who are plotting against Trump and we, his supporters. Here are some excerpts from a video posted September 29 on the newamerican.com website, contending that Trump is the target of yet another deep state coup being promoted, this time along the lines of the so-called color revolution coups that have taken place in Eastern Europe. Play soundbite 5, please.
Deep state appears to be plotting a coup d'etat against the president of the United States of America. It's been compared to a color revolution along the lines of what's been going on in Eastern Europe by the democracy establishment. Stay tuned. There is a growing amount of evidence that the deep state is planning a so-called color revolution in the United States against not just the president of the United States, but even our system of government. We have very, very powerful actors within and outside of the government who appear to be on board. Looks like elements of the armed forces are now involved. And this is not just my opinion. This is even according to experts in the field who've been involved with this type of stuff, people who've worked in the Trump administration, and now even a growing list of pundits, including some of the most important conservative pundits in America, like Tucker Carlson and Glenn Beck, and even the former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. So this is now making a big splash. And as I was researching this, one of the things that I realized is many of the same exact people, the same exact organizations, and the same exact strategies that have been used in other countries, especially in Eastern Europe, in the Middle East, and even into the Asian continent, are now involved in what appears to be a plot to have a coup d'etat here in the United States, very much along the lines of these color revolutions that the CIA and the National Democratic Endowment, or the National Endowment for Democracy and all these other major so-called democracy organizations have been involved in. And the 2020 election will be right at the center of it all. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, you know now that everybody is talking about voter fraud. The Democrats are talking about it. The Republicans are talking about it. This mail-in voting scam that they have unleashed on us under the guise of keeping us safe from coronavirus. It's fine to go burn down your city. It's fine to go burn down a church. It's fine to go down burn Bibles. It's fine to go protest against police. And it's fine to go to Walmart. And it's fine to do all those things. But it's not fine to vote. Apparently, COVID discriminates between when you're voting and when you're shopping at Walmart, and when you're voting and when you are burning down buildings. So anyways, because of coronavirus, supposedly the COVID-1984 virus, people are too scared to go vote. And so now we have to have this vote by mail. And obviously, that is ripe for abuse. Meanwhile, we've got open insubordination by former military officials who are, by the way, prohibited by the Uniform Code of Military Justice from criticizing the current commander-in-chief. They're doing it anyway. We've got this siege of the White House, where all these radical left-wing extremists funded by billionaires in the deep state, we go back and see our episodes, are planning to have a basically massive protest that'll last for weeks and weeks. And we have a powerful media machine that is obviously trying to overthrow the president of the United States. And so it's clear that no matter what happens in the weeks ahead, chaos is going to continue to grow. And the deep state thrives on chaos. They love chaos because out of chaos, they have this crisis. It gives them the opportunity to do, as Rahm Emanuel, Obama's chief of staff, said, the crisis gives the chance to do things that you couldn't do before. It's also an opportunity that you don't want to waste. waste, is how they view it. And so you have now people within Trump's network and outside of the network warning that a storm is brewing. Now, we've got these obviously fake polls telling us that Biden is going to win in a landslide, very similar to what we saw in 2016. Polls that were so obviously phony that anybody with a brain knew they were fraudulent. We're seeing the exact same thing in this election, where they say, oh, Biden's going to win in a landslide and all the rest of it. They're trying to condition the American people to believe that there is no chance that Trump can win a legitimate election. Either he's going to steal the election or he's going to be clobbered. Now, to this color revolution idea. For a little bit of a background, I'll talk about what a color revolution is, and then we'll come back to what this looks like in the United States. Now, the term color revolution refers to these various efforts, many of them successful, to overthrow the governments of certain Eastern European countries, former Soviet governments, and things like that. And we did see some happen in Asia and the Middle East. These were really regime change operations, very often orchestrated by Western operatives from the deep state, very much including the intelligence agencies and these never-ending armies of so-called non-governmental organizations, many of them funded by taxpayer money from the West, many of them funded by people like George Soros, by these deep state foundations that we've talked about. Some of these so-called color revolutions have even been portrayed as anti-communist in nature, but there's more to that story, too. We've talked about the fraudulent collapse of communism on this program, on Behind the Deep State. We have defectors from the KGB who revealed what they were planning to do years before it happened. Anatoly Golitsyn, for example, I've got some of his books behind me, New Lies for the Old and the Perestroika Deception. He warned of these phony, fraudulent revolutions that would take place that would appear to overthrow the existing communist government and the communist people, and that really they would stay in control just from behind the scenes. Oftentimes, as I mentioned, these phony color revolutions are funded by the National Endowment for Democracy, and there are a whole group of there is a whole group of these people who specialize in these color revolutions. One of them is Obama's former ambassador to Moscow, to Russia, a guy by the name of Michael McFaul, who's a key deep state operative. In fact, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. You should go back and watch our episode on the CFR if you haven't yet. This is probably the premier deep state organization above the surface in the United States today. They tell Hillary Clinton what she should be doing and how she should be thinking about the future.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Joe Biden, the candidate for 2020, says he works for the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass.
I probably should introduce myself to people, everybody. My name is Richard Haass, by the way. I work here at the Council on Foreign Relations.
And I work for Richard.
And even many Republicans are involved, as we've discussed many times.
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
So with that background, obviously the Council on Foreign Relations is a very, very powerful organization, probably deep state headquarters in the United States. And this Michael McFaul, who's a member, and we'll talk about some other members of the CFR too, he has been crucial in a lot of these color revolutions. He identified seven traits that you have in these color revolutions. And what you'll see is they bear a lot in common with what we're seeing now. One of them is that you have an unpopular incumbent. Now, I wouldn't say Trump is unpopular per se, although the media has tried to create that impression in many parts of the country. And I've been traveling all over America. Trump is extraordinarily popular. In fact, in my whole life, I've never seen the kind of enthusiasm that I see for President Trump, for any candidate. I mean, you know, maybe it was like that for Reagan, before I was born. But in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like what I'm seeing for Trump. So whether Trump is an unpopular incumbent or not, I leave that to you, dear viewer, to decide. I think the media is lying, but be that as it may. You also have an organized effort to discredit the election results by the media. And we'll come back to this. There's a crucial organization funded by George Soros that's involved in this. You have mobilization of large numbers of protesters, which, you know, I don't have to tell you, we've been talking about Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the Sunrise Movement, all these Freedom Road socialist organization, the Communist Party, all these rent-a-mobs, the Revolutionary Communist Party, USA, they're all out there in the streets protesting against President Trump. You've got divisions among supporters of the intended target, in this case, President Trump, and there are divisions among Trump supporters, right? You have the Christian conservatives, you have, you know, the pro military, pro police. You have the social conservatives. You have the libertarians. In some cases, have even joined the Trump bandwagon. So there are divisions within Trump's movement. It's certainly not monolithic. And so what we see is all of these elements of a color revolution are present in the United States. Now McCall, the man I mentioned, seems to be right at the center of this effort for a color revolution. Just not too long ago, in September, he wrote on Twitter that Trump has lost the intelligence community, he's lost the State Department, and he's lost the military. Then he says, how can he continue to serve as our commander in chief? Now, if that doesn't sound like somebody plotting a coup, I don't know what does.
Despite that, what we are faced with is the path toward ending America as we have known it and being plunged into a socialist hell. Millions upon millions of Americans simply refuse to believe or see any of this and will faithfully vote for any Democrat for president. I'm very, very worried about all this. I am a worrier, but I think I have good reason in this case. These people opposing Trump include members of my own family, ever faithful Democrats, one and all, and some of my longtime friends. I basically don't talk about politics with my family members, or we would wind up not talking at all with each other. It's very frustrating, but it's a fact that I have to live with. I do appreciate them not denouncing me for being on the right of the political spectrum and a supporter of Trump. But on the other hand, even though I, like them, grew up with Tom Brokaw and NBC, ABC, CBS, I long since left those networks, those information sources or disinformation sources, and look widely on the right side of the political spectrum, look for outlets that provide that information, the right side of the political spectrum, on the internet, which is still largely has a lot of these voices. My take on this is that my family members and my Trump hater friends have no other guide to live by except the information they get from these predominantly left-wing personalities in the media, including the entertainment media, who they grew up with or otherwise have spent years watching and listening to and accept and trust as credible judges of reality. Never mind that the overwhelming evidence is that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats are the ones who colluded with Russia. I've spoken on past shows about entities associated with the Russian government contributing some $147 million to Clinton's supposedly charitable foundation, while the Russian government had a proposal before the U.S. State Department, while Hillary was Secretary of State, to gain control of 20% of strategic U.S. uranium production, a proposal that Hillary's State Department subsequently approved. And also during this time, a bank connected with the Russian government flew old Bill Clinton over to Moscow and paid him $500,000, that's half a million, for giving a single speech. Isn't all this a huge ethical conflict? Not at all, according to the Democrat mainstream media. Fact is, you never see anything about it, about any of it there, or certainly not very often, and when you do, it's well buried. But it's established elsewhere on the internet and in videos and books, particularly by investigative journalist Peter Schweitzer. And Joe Biden is there on video bragging about himself threatening to withhold $1 billion U.S. loan guarantee for Ukraine if the Ukraine didn't fire, which it subsequently did, a state prosecutor investigating corruption allegations against Ukrainian energy company Burisma, which at the time was paying huge sums to Biden's son Hunter as one of its directors. This is while Biden was, as I said, president or vice president. Last Wednesday, the U.S. Senate Homeland Security Committee reported that Hunter Biden's company, Rosemont Seneca Thornton LLC, received a $3 million payment from Russian oligarch in 2014, a again, while Biden was vice president, as payment for a consultancy agreement. Then there was Biden's state trip to mainland China some years ago on Air Force Two, which included son Hunter. Within 10 days after returning to the U.S., Hunter Biden signed a $1.5 billion business deal with a company called Bohai Harvest associated with the State Bank of China. Now you see Joe Biden praising communist China and being endorsed by the communist Chinese government as someone they prefer as U.S. president for smoother relations between the two countries. It's not difficult to see that all the Russia collusion crap is a smokescreen thrown up by Democrats and the deep state to distract Americans from seeing the deepening business entanglements between our country and Red China, which has been and continues to be costing millions of American jobs and the destruction of the American middle class, although Trump has done a lot to turn that around. And many of these people, as has been reported on previous shows and from different sources, are afraid these people getting fabulously enriched, they and their families, through plush business deals with communist China, they're afraid of their fortunes being affected by this effort to bring more American jobs back. How do you think Apple became a trillion-dollar company? They have a lot of cheap labor making those expensive phones, and they're in China. Do so many Americans, including my own family members and friends, see any of this? Not that I can see. Nor do they see the inevitable consequences. They only see that Trump is somehow a terrible president and must go, and the Democrats are our salvation. So get the message, folks? Biden is going to win in a landslide. Don't bother voting. Don't bother making your voice heard. Don't bother to bother about it at all. The election is a done deal. Get used to it and live with it. You're going to love it. I realize there are many people who, having been conditioned by their masters in the media, our educational establishment elsewhere, who view Republicans as a bunch of white bigots who are Christian religious zealots and racists, who only care about white people and the rich. If you watched the Republican National Convention in August, you saw that these are stereotypes perpetrated by the pro-leftist, pro-Democrat powers. Now, I was raised as a Christian, though I'm not religious in the Orthodox Christian sense. In America today, many of us are not deeply religious, at least in the Orthodox sense. But we are free to worship or not worship as we please, which is a fundamental right established by the founders. Still, I have a lot more in common with those who are deeply religious than with the godless, nihilist, communist, globalist political left, which is a fundamentally racist and collectivist movement driven by raging self-righteous hatred, hidden and disguised as it is, as righteous indignation at supposed great injustice. Another one of the very strange features of the left is that it has many very powerful, wealthy individuals who promote this stuff. For some reason, apparently, these people feel that they're going to keep all their wealth, or when they do give up some of it, they'll still stay rich and happy. And there's no doubt our way of life isn't perfect or always has justice for everyone, but it's far, far better than what we are being told is going to be the inevitable transition of our way of life into collectivism and subjugation to world government, whether we agree with it or not. The choice in November could not be more clear. Well, that's it for another show. Look for us again 2 weeks from tonight in the same time slot. Have a good evening and rest of your weekend.